podcast. This week is all about Allegiant, which just released on Tuesday, and lots of people have lots of feels about this book, including the panel today. And today we have a special guest, Joanna Volpp, and she is the president of New Leaf Literary, and she's Veronica Roth's literary agent. So welcome, Jo. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So let's start off with, what does it mean to be a literary agent? Because you're our first guest that's a literary agent, so tell us all about it.
Hey, well, we do pretty much everything. We work for the authors, with the authors, and guide their career. So we do everything from find their project, either at a conference, by referral, in the slush, help them develop that project, then go on submission with it. And then once we have offers, we negotiate that deal for them. And then once we pick a publisher, we see the book through publication in every step of the way. So we're the one making sure that the publisher is doing everything they promised they would do, doing everything that they should do. There are highs and lows to this. You know, if a book gets delayed, contract gets canceled, I mean, that's stuff that we help to do. I've actually worked on books that have gotten canceled before, and I had to negotiate those as well because, you know, it's not a matter of walking away. You have to make sure the author has every single bit of his or her rights back. And then we're also planning the next book. So it's really like soup to nuts, a bunch of stuff.
Sounds like you have a lot of balls to juggle at once when you're working with a client.
Definitely.
So how many clients do you typically work with at once? Do you have just one client or do you have multiple clients?
Oh, I have 37 clients.
So you're a little busy, to say the least.
just a little bit.
So obviously the big story this week is Allegiant releasing and it's Veronica Roth. And so how did you connect with Veronica? How did you guys find each other?
I met Veronica at a conference, actually, in 2009. She just pitched a project to me. It was not Divergent. And it was really... She had sent it to me. I asked to see it. And it was really good. It was really good, but it was kind of like a paranormal romance. That's what a lot of... That was what was big at the time. And I just didn't think... Even though it was very well written, I think it was what she should be writing. She wrote with the same intensity that she wrote Divergent with. But I gave her some notes and she revised and it still just wasn't getting where it needed to be. So I just said, you know what, this isn't the right project, I think. Can you please send me your next thing? No, I think you're a really good writer. And she did, and it was Divergent. So I'm really glad that I asked her to send it to me.
That is just one of those stories that I think just goes to show, if you're persistent as a writer, that you can kind of find what's just right for you at the time. So I think that's a great story, actually. And the fact that you were so willing to see something different, I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I've done that a couple times, and people I ended up signing later.
We'll see. You're a very flexible agent, because sometimes I hear very different stories from people who are writers about different agents, so I think it's wonderful that you're willing to be like, no, I like what you have, but let's look at this instead.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So how did the Divergent series develop? Because I think a lot of people felt that, because Divergent came out post the first book of The Hunger Games, and everyone was like, oh, she's just writing it because of Suzanne Collins and her success. But that's not the case, because Divergent was already picked up by a publishing house long before The Hunger Games was even published, if I remember correctly.
Let me think. No, I actually think the first Hunger Games book had just come out.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I think it had just come out shortly before we sold it. I'd have to actually look at the timeline on a calendar. But I didn't pitch it as a dystopia or anything, because at that time it was very difficult to sell any subgenre of sci-fi. So it's not even like that was popular, like nothing was popular yet, including The Hunger Games. It was like, oh, that's a book that's doing nicely, you know, but pay attention to it, but it wasn't like what it is today. So I pitched it as a futuristic thriller, because it's true, but I was like, how can I make this seem not dystopian? So that's what I had pitched it as. But, I mean, Veronica actually had started writing the first draft of Divergent was from Tobias's point of view, and she had started that draft 4 years before I sold it. So, like, 3 years before I met her. And then her computer actually, that computer crashed. That draft is lost in the ether. Although she was.
Oh, no.
I know. I was like, could you imagine? She was just saying yesterday that it opened up with the same haircutting scene, except it was between Tobias and his father, and it was very tense. And I was like, oh, that sounds so great. But anyway, so I digress. So this book had been in the works for a while. But yeah, with the Hunger Games thing, I will say, though, that the cover for the Divergent books with the flame and stuff, that came out well before the movie Hunger Games stuff even was a thing. So I think that's where some people say, like, she ripped off the cover. And I was like, dude, we were totally first. But, you know, like, we try not to, like, I don't know. We usually don't say that, I guess. And I just said it. Oh, well. There you go.
Yeah. I think it's hysterical that you didn't pitch it as a dystopian, because nowadays you can't walk into a bookstore without, like, the dystopian books screaming at you from the shelves. So I find it totally amusing that you pitch it as a futuristic thriller. I love that.
I know.
So, and this is a very important question, and I think Mikhail came up with this question. I want to be very clear to all of our listeners, because they're gonna see it and be like, Jen, that was you again, wasn't it? Mikhail
Listen,
would
I
like
had
to know
to ask.
What? And no, we actually have. That's why it's even funnier to me. If you have met Theo James, and is he gorgeous?
I have met Theo James, and he is a gorgeous, gorgeous man.
I will second that. Because
he's also really
at a Comic-Con party, and yeah.
He is absolutely fine. Yes, yeah. I agree.
I mean, he's also really smart and very intense as an actor and very funny. So he's pretty cool all around. But yeah, he's pretty attractive.
See, that's clearly the point we needed to make, was that he's attractive. No, he's also very cool. Thank you for filling in those gaps, because Marima and I were at a party and we saw him, but we didn't talk to him because that's just awkward.
when I talked to him at
of course Kyle talked to him.
Well, yes.
You haven't met Kyle, but this would be what Kyle would do.
At Hypeable, I talked to him at Comic-Con during one of the red carpet interviews, and I was just like, hi. I couldn't get my words out because he's just too pretty.
It's just so funny to me that the dead Turkish guy is now, like, on all the
wall posters, right?
Because it was Abby, like, he didn't look particularly handsome on Downton Abbey, and now it's like, oh my god.
It was the hair in Downton Abbey. He had all that weird hair.
Yeah. And being dead.
Yeah, and dying in bed is kind of unattractive. Throwing it out there.
I've actually been trying to, like, work up, like, I probably could just ask him this, but whether or not what they were carrying, like, was it his really body they carried through the manor, or was it a dummy?
Oh, you know, that's kind, like, of I really funny, out. Actually. Did they drag you through the manor and whack your head off things? Because that'd be awesome.
Is that why you decided to do Divergent, which is a lot less physically strenuous?
Hey, I'll follow up with that. That's good. I will ask you one day.
Oh, that's so funny. All right, so let's just get into the big discussion that is Allegiant, because it's a big book. It is the third and final book in the trilogy, and like I said earlier, there are tons of feels about this book. It's a love-hate relationship. It's all over the map. People have lots of comments about it. So let's just start off with how everyone here kind of, like, felt about it, and then we'll get into the discussion. So, Mikhail, do you want to start?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I feel like something that I've consistently been really impressed by Veronica's work is how fast it reads. Even though I didn't read it in like 3 hours, like Marima, I did manage to, you know, it definitely flowed because I had to physically put it down because I had other stuff to do. But it flowed very well. And yeah, it was definitely gripping, and the end was, you know, heart-wrenching. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it was a very solid finish to the trilogy. It definitely left me feeling satisfied in the right ways, and unsatisfied in the right ways also, I think.
Do you want to go next?
I think you can predict what I thought about it.
You loved it because there was death.
Yes! Oh, my goodness. No, that's not one of the only reasons. I really liked it a lot. I liked the point of views between Tobias and Triss, even though sometimes when Tobias came up, I was just like, no, stop talking, please, just let me get back to Triss, because I hated him during part of it. But as a book overall, I really liked the story, and I really liked what they all kind of went through, and in the end, and the epilogue kind of like was really awesome, so I liked all of it, and I feel like that's a rare reaction, because everyone seems to be disliking it, but like, I really loved it a lot.
Marima?
Yeah, so I read it when it first came out, and I suppose Divergent has never been my favorite series. Like, I don't hate it or dislike it by any means. It just was never something I was, like, really passionate about. But I did really enjoy Allegiant. I think I enjoyed it more from a sort of theoretical point of view, that I found some of the choices that she made in it to be really fascinating. And the reaction from fans has been even more interesting. I think it was a good book. It wasn't, like, my favorite book by any means. But, you know, it's definitely something I would, like, recommend to other people, and I think it was a really, really good finish to the series. I think it really elevated the entire series, this final book.
Excellent. I think a lot of the backlash is almost, at this point, it's almost a cultural thing. Like, when you get the final book in a series, it's almost cool to be unhappy with it. Like, do you know what I mean? Because you're unhappy the series is ending, so I think a lot of the backlash comes from, well, my favorite book series is now ended, and I'm not going to like any of it because it's not exactly the way I wanted it. It doesn't check off all the neat little boxes that I wanted it to. Does that make sense to you guys? Like, I feel like this has happened with every major, with every major ending book release, that there's been tons of backlash. No one has ever sat down and been like, oh, I love this final book, as, like, a whole community. I think everyone's just, in general, been unhappy for whatever reason they choose to at the time.
See,
do you guys kind of get that feeling?
Yeah, I agree with that, but at the same time, I feel like there's something about Allegiant that has been a lot more visceral than we've had for other books. Like, Harry Potter, definitely a lot of people did not like the ending of Harry Potter, especially the epilogue. I know with Breaking Dawn, a lot of Twilight fans are not very happy with that. Mockingjay, even. Like, Mockingjay had a very negative reaction, but at the same time, it doesn't feel the way that the Allegiant reaction feels, because this seems very personal, and, like, people were not saying about Mockingjay, don't read this book. You know, people were saying, like, oh, it was rushed, and I was disappointed, etc. But, like, something about Allegiant has, like, made people just, oh, it's so interesting to see it, because I can't find a parallel with another book that has come out.
No.
You know?
No, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she was daring enough to kill a main character.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I think it's
great. Do you
know
what I mean? Like, I really think that that's what it is that people for 3 books loved this character, and now she's gone.
Yeah.
So it kind of ends their hope of getting anything more from her, because she's no longer available. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with it. But I think it was the right choice for the book. I think she made a brave choice that was what she needed to do for the story she needed to tell.
It's funny because their complaints are like, oh, like, don't read it because the ending, like, totally ruins the rest of the series, and it's like, it's completely pointless now. And I'm like, no, it's like, it's not completely pointless now. Like, if anything, like, her death kind of, like, makes the entire series, because then it's all worth something in the end for what she was able to do. And people are like, oh, no, it's pointless because she's dead and now they won't be together. So I'm like, just calm down.
Right. People are looking for happily ever after in a dystopian. So it's kind of
contrary. I mean, I think that a lot of the fans that are reacting where they are, I don't want to sound so arrogant to say that this is what a book I worked on could do, but I really think some of them are grieving. And one of the first stages is, like, extreme anger. If you ever lost anybody, that's what it is like. And they identify with Triss so closely that when it happens, it's like you really are losing something, or something really important, something that you put a lot of emotional bits of yourself into. So that could be part of what it is, too.
I think that's a great point and a great way to frame it as well. That, yeah, I think that they probably, like I said, are, like you said, are grieving because they know there is no more Triss. There's nothing available after that. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Excellent point. So for you, when you get the last novel from Veronica and you see that Triss is dead, for you, as someone who's worked on the spreadsheet the whole time, how do you react to that? What do you do with that? Or did you know all along it was coming? If you're allowed to say, you don't have to answer.
I did know it was coming. Not many people knew, and Veronica, this was her plan all along, and it wasn't shock anyone. It was part of Triss's growth, and actually she's going to be posting something about this on her blog this week. So I guess keep an eye out for that, but it was part of her growth. But I knew it was coming, and even knowing it was coming, I totally felt punched in the gut. I was sitting in my living room reading the draft, and I just started to sob, because as I knew it was coming, I was like, no, and sobbing, and I'm like 10 pages from the end or whatever it was. And my husband comes in from the other room. He's like, is everything okay? And I just was like, get out of here. Just get out of here. Like, I was like, so like emotionally a wreck at the moment. But, I just thought it was so well done. I thought you did it right, but I'm still just a wreck right now.
I know how you feel. I was ugly crying at Barnes & Noble, and I was like, nope, can't cry in public.
I love that you were ugly crying, but you live for like character deaths.
I love what they do to me. I'm a masochist.
So I was actually spoiled in like the dumbest possible way. Like, I avoided all the posts. I didn't like look it up on Twitter. It was just the stupidest way I was spoiled. Which, thank you, fanfiction.net. I wasn't looking at Divergent fanfiction. I was looking at something completely else, and yeah. But we did actually kind of suspect that. I think we talked about this, right? When the summary came out.
Yeah, I may have predicted Triss's death.
We totally predicted it, I think.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, either Triss or Four. I wasn't sure which one. But by the time I found out that it was Triss, I was about halfway through the book. And that made, like, the experience of reading the rest of the book, like, so much more intense, because I was like, is she going to do it now? Is she going to do it now? Like, when she was, you know, on the fringe, I was like, oh my god, she's going to die now. And then it was like, you know, just waiting and waiting and waiting. And by the time, you know, she saved Caleb, I was like, oh crap, this is all going to go down. So it was a very intense experience. And it was really tough to be in Ford's head after that. That was,
actually, that brings up a good point. Like, Joe, like, when she said that she was going to kill Triss off, and it was announced that this final book was going to be the only book with both perspectives, didn't it kind of seem like, oh, it might be a little obvious, maybe, not like, maybe a little bit, that one of the characters was going to die, because one of the only needs to have two perspectives, as we spoke about like earlier, was if one of the characters dies. So like, did that seem like a hindrance to you at all, like having two perspectives and all of a sudden one character before?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I think a lot of series have been doing that recently. I mean, this isn't the reason she did it, but I think a lot of authors like to explore it, because by the time they get to a third book in a series, they're kind of, you know, they want to explore other parts of the world, and the best way to do that is through other points of view. But with this book, I think a lot of people didn't think one of the characters would die. I think that they thought that they would separate for a long period of time. Like, one would be outside the fence, one would be inside, you know, something like that. Like, I think that's what we were getting a lot of predictions for. And, you know, of course, we were just like, we can't tell you, which, you know, it was very hard not to talk about it with anybody for a really long time. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we had done that Free Four piece a while ago that got such a good reaction, and it was just a promotional piece. It got such a good reaction after being up for free for months that they were like, oh, well, let's just sell it as a free piece, I guess. And then that's when they came up with, like, let's do the short story. So before Allegiant came out, The Transfer had already come out. So that was also from Four's point of view. So I think it was, like, ways to introduce the readers to the possibility, like, or like, what was going to happen. by getting used to his point of view and whatnot.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the plot. The escape from Chicago, Welcome to the Bureau, all of the things that happened in this book, and there was a lot happening in this book. So what did you guys think? Was there a favorite part for you from this whole kind of plot or subplot line as that we're running through the book?
For me, I really enjoyed the expansion of the world because I felt like what she did with this book, and it kind of ran through the entire thing, like, I mean, Truce's death, like, yes, it's emotional and everything, but that wasn't what interested me about this. The way that she, like, twisted everything that we had believed from the first two books, to me, the only other book that I have really felt that with was maybe Ender's Game, where you, like, go through the entire book thinking that one thing is happening and you get to the last chapter and you realize, like, it's all completely different. And that's, like, what I felt like she was doing with this entire book. So you get outside and you realize, like, okay, this is an experiment, and this is Chicago, and, you know, there are all these people living in other places, and there are all these other experiments going on. That, to me, was the coolest part of it. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think my favorite part also was when they escaped and arrived in the bureau, because it was kind of the most hopeful part of the story. Like, you didn't know all the craziness that was going on, and, you know, oh, Amar's alive, and this is all great, and, like, there's so much kind of potential. And then, you know, and then obviously things get more complicated, as they should, but I really liked that moment of, like, oh, maybe we can be okay here, and, like, we don't understand yet, but, well, it was also really interesting to see, you know, everybody go, like, what's an airplane, and things like that. So that was my favorite part.
I think my favorite part, I can't choose if I liked Peter or Caleb's arc more. Peter's towards the end, and Caleb's kind of more towards the whole thing, because the part about Peter that I liked was that he was so fascinated with how big the world was, and, like, it just blew his mind that Chicago was this tiny, tiny percentage of the entire Earth, and he was just trying to figure out what the other percentage was, and I thought that was, like, amazing. Like, these people thought that this area was their whole world, and it was, and then they realized that they're much smaller than they thought they were. And then on Caleb's end, I liked the struggle of a character who's done something wrong and is trying to, like, repent for it, I guess is the term, and he's just trying to make up for it, and he's trying to prove to Triss that he does love her, and Triss is just kind of like, no, like, I can't talk to you right now. Like, that whole arc and his character development, and at the end when they finally say that they love each other, like, I love that.
Oh, so you like the sappy parts. Kyle. He doesn't just like death, he likes the sappy too. I love it. It's fantastic. I think that the whole expansion of the world, like Myrma said, was fantastic, because the first two stories take space, and you don't realize how small, I guess, their bubble is until you step outside of that bubble and realize that they were only in the smallest part of Chicago before it expands for them. So I think that was a really fascinating look on how a community lives and exists and how small their world can be to them, and how, you know, what happens when they expand out beyond that. So I thought that was really cool. Is there any storylines that you guys didn't felt warped, that maybe were a little too complicated or maybe weren't necessary?
Okay, I do, yes. I was trying to unmute my Skype and it froze. The thing that confused me a little bit, Anna, was the whole GD versus GP thing and, like, all the different kind of, like, rebellions that were happening. And, like, it made sense because, like, I feel like that is what would happen if it actually happened, but, like, it was just a little confusing kind of trying to understand at a certain point what Tobias did and for who and what that group represented and kind of what was going on with that whole thing, until it was kind of made clear at the end, like, when they were all talking about how Uriah was, like, in a coma and stuff, and, like, it's all Tobias's fault because he worked with the wrong people without knowing all the wrong information. Like, at the beginning, it was just a little confusing trying to figure out who was who, who's fighting for what, what the Fringe is technically, and like, there's just a lot of new groups of people that confused me a little bit, but once you get the grasp of it, it makes sense.
Yeah,
I was like, the Uriah stuff really was, I definitely can see a clear argument that it belongs in the story, and it's kind of part of the reason why Four goes back to Chicago and all this, but like, that was really like pouring like acid into the wounds of the book for me. Like when Four is like trying to cope with, you know, Triss dying, and then like, first of all, you have that whole arc of him like, oh, he's gonna protect him, and then no, he actually like unintentionally blows him up, and then you know, at the end when it's like Four is like catatonic and he's like crazy with grief because of Triss, and it's like, oh, come on, you know, let's go, they're gonna you know, they're about to unplug Uriah, and I was like, Jesus, like, how are we, like, I can't handle this. I was really, 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 really hoping that he would just like miraculously wake up, but he didn't. I will just say I really liked the GDGP stuff. It took like a little bit to grow on me because I was a little, it was a very new element, but at the same time, I really liked it, and I liked its applications in the general story, and kind of how you could sort of see it like moving backward into what had happened before.
Yeah, I agree. I think I really like that part because it makes complete and total sense for them to discover something that's not part of their world at all, and they have to like figure out that their world is an experiment, and like, it's part of the overall plot and the story that Veronica wanted to create, and it makes total sense. I would have loved like 50 more pages just kind of like explaining like everyone's point of view a little bit, not like from their point of view, but like explaining Nita's point of view a little bit more or something.
Oh yeah, I didn't dislike it at all. Like I said, I just felt like in places the metaphor was a little heavy for me.
Okay, so let's move on and talk about, we've been talking about characters and stuff kind of throughout, but let's specifically talk about Triss and Four and kind of their story arcs. How did you guys feel about their story arcs? Were you satisfied with how it played out in the last book? Because this is, I mean, all along we've really had a focus on Triss and Four through the first two books.
I like their story arcs. The thing about Triss and Four that I really love is that the fact that they fight so often is just because it's a realistic relationship portrayal, because people do fight that often and people kind of like get angry with each other, even though it might not be like the healthiest relationship ever, and it's not like I don't know, Edward and Bella, for example. It's not them, they have their issues, but they work to get past them. But the thing that I didn't like was Triss getting angry at Tobias for what happened at Uriah, because it wasn't his fault. And like, at first it made sense because it hurt one of her best friends and it made sense. But as soon as you find out that that's all he did and he didn't realize what was going on, I personally would have been like, okay, I get it. But like, she was mad at him for like a good long time. And I'm like, I don't like that.
Oh, I really liked that. That was one of my favorite bits of their relationship in this book, because I think both Triss and Four have had problems in the previous two books because they're so separated from their families and they are, you know, considered leaders and they are fairly independent that often they're not held accountable for the things that they do. And the things that they do have like these crazy huge ramifications. So, you know, yeah, it wasn't, Four didn't plan for that to happen to Uriah, but, you know, he didn't listen to Triss and he didn't really think it through and he wasn't really acting in, you know, the best way that he could. So, yeah, I really liked that, especially because it really played into the bit later where, you know, she has that conversation and it's like, well, wait a second, like, we can have a fight and I can be mad at him, but, you know, we don't call this whole thing off. And I felt, yeah, like you were saying, Kyle, that was a really realistic portrayal. And compared to a lot of other YA and just like general fiction where either the relationship is like so peachy clean that nothing ever happens, or, you know, they have their first fight and that's it, which are both ridiculous. I really liked this. Yeah, there are like lots of ups and downs and that kept it interesting.
Yeah, I think Yeah, it was very interesting to be in both of their heads because they did have, like, I keep thinking of, the very interesting contrast in the book of philosophy, or I don't know if philosophy is the right word, but like thought and action, because both Triss and Four live so much in their heads, and they keep sort of dropping these like psychological like bombs and revelations, and and they're very astute and they're really powerful, but at the same time I was a little bit like it wore on me a little bit to see them think so much, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It was just that like I needed a break every so often. Like the whole attack was a big, it was very like it was a relief for me because we kind of got some action in the middle,
All right, so let's talk about Caleb a little bit. Caleb had a very interesting role in this kind of in this whole last book, especially with Triss. So what did you guys think of Caleb? Did you like him? Did you hate him? Did you want him to die?
I love, love, love Caleb. I
Me
loved him
too.
even when he
Love
betrayed
him.
Triss. I was so upset in Insurgent when that happened. I really love him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I completely like love Caleb so much because he's the character that kind of signifies the person that does something wrong and knows what they did wrong, but is completely like and totally apologetic about it and realizes that it was wrong, and he's trying to get through that, and his choices are affecting him as well as the people he loves, and he hates it and he can't help and he doesn't know what to do, and I love that. Like, I love that there's a character portrayal of someone who did something wrong and has to kind of fix it and try to work through it, even though it might not be the easiest thing to fix.
What I really liked about it was that she didn't give him sort of a way to fix it. Like at the end of that book, you still get the sense that he's still living with that decision that he made. And he's never going to have the chance to, him sacrificing himself was his chance to make it right. And he's never going to have that chance. And he has to just live with what he did. And I really like that because, I don't think, in life you don't always get your golden moment to redeem yourself for things that you've done in the past, and he didn't get it. And yeah, I thought it was a pretty harsh decision because she could have included some, him taking a bullet for someone or whatever, some way for him to like feel better about it, and for us as readers to feel like, oh, Caleb's all redeemed now. But by the end of the book, I felt like yes, he definitely regretted what he did, and he was trying to make amends for it, but I wouldn't necessarily call that the same as like a redemption arc. So yeah, I really like that choice for his character.
And I love that there wasn't like a cop out for what he did. Like, he wasn't under truth serum or anything, or like he wasn't like I was thinking Vampire Diaries. He wasn't like compelled to like do anything for Janine. He just did it because he thought it was right, and Janine
Yeah. I don't
was
get
very
the,
persuasive.
yeah, I don't get the Vampire Diaries reference, but I see where you're going with this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I like that
He was not
he
under
did it
the,
because he believed it.
yeah, it's like he wasn't under
Exactly.
the Imperius curse. He actually was a Death Eater. That's like the equivalent. So, yeah, I
Exactly.
feel
Yeah.
that.
And I love
Doing one really bad thing does not make you a Death Eater.
Okay, can we just
I
like
mean
clear this up for a minute? He didn't like run over someone's foot or whatever. He tried to kill his sister, so
And then when Janine Matthews was like, "We need to kill your sister," he was like, "I don't want to, but okay."
yeah, he was
Like,
like, okay, sure, let's do that. So I liked that he was held accountable for his decisions. I feel like that does not happen enough, especially with kind of periphery characters that could be pushed aside. So, yeah, I liked it. I liked that Triss made him feel bad about it, and everyone made him feel bad about it. I really loved Christina in this, while we're speaking of like of other minor characters. I thought
Oh my God, I'm so glad she survived.
she was cool, and I loved her like friendship that she kind of starts with Tobias at the end. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
I had like no feelings for any of the extra characters. Like, I didn't give a crap if like Christina or Kara or Uriah or anyone died. I was like, I don't care about you.
Oh, see, I cared more about all of those than I did about Triss and Four, because, like, honestly, Triss and Four to me have never been that interesting of characters, and I think that's just because I'm not at all interested in their, like, romance. That's just, you know, that's not really the kind of books that I'm into, so I was always more interested in the quote-unquote side characters. So, like, Caleb and Christina, like, Kara, I mean, yeah, give or take, but, you know, the others were interesting.
I actually really liked Kara. I thought she was... I was sort of like, okay, I'm sort of at my limit of people I can care about. And then she just kind of, like, wormed her way into my heart, and I was like, well, this is surprising, but I hope you get together with Matthew.
I did really like how Kara kind of represented, I guess, the readers thinking, you know, oh, I thought this was really important, and oh, you know, I was trying to do this, and now I realize, like, nothing that I thought was true, and, you know, nothing kind of matters in the way that I thought it did. And actually, I wanted to ask you guys, what did you think of, you know, when we found out what the Allegiant actually were? Because that kind of, at the end of the day, like, I guess I felt like it didn't really matter that much. And I was a little bit like, why is this the title? Like, were there no other agent words? Because, you know, that seemed like sort of a passing thought, but I don't know what you thought.
It felt a little forced to call the entire book Allegiant, and then Allegiant had like maybe like three chapters worth of like being worth something in the book, and then afterwards it's like, well, Allegiant don't matter anymore, so whatever. Because like the factions don't matter anyway, and then it's just yeah.
I think the theme of Allegiant, you know, of people connecting to each other was very relevant through the book, but I'm very rarely like, oh, you should actually tell us this, you know, because if it's not, I don't like it when things are on the nose, but I think we maybe could have used a little bit more symmetry, maybe like a parallel to the Allegiant, like maybe between Triss and Four, like one of them thinks like, this is our Allegiant, or I don't know, something like that. To kind of bring it into, to make it more personal as opposed to just a political movement. I mean, that said, like, the fact that the Allegiant exist are sort of why everything goes down in Chicago. But, you know, on a plot level, it wasn't as compelling as I think it would have been on a thematic level.
Speaking of themes, let's talk a little bit about the themes of this book. There kind of felt like there was a lot going on theme-wise. Did you guys have that same feeling?
Yes. Definitely.
Yes, so many themes.
And I almost wonder that if part of people's feelings towards this book was that there was so much going on, they couldn't focus just on one or even like three things. There were that many things going on. And if it was just felt a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah. So fair though, I feel like a lot of these, like I know Jo was saying at the start, you know, she couldn't market this book as a dystopian book, but by the time we got through the end of Allegiant, I felt like a lot of these themes are sort of traditional things that do go along with dystopian literature kind of in a bundle together with, you know, like questions of government and hierarchy and things like that. So for me, maybe because I do read a lot of dystopian, I didn't feel that to be like a particular problem, but I have seen a lot of criticism that there was just too much going on and not enough time to deal with it all. So I think you're probably right about that.
Yeah, and again, I think that has a lot to do with it, like you said, because I think when people think of dystopian novels, they don't necessarily think of things that are as expansive as this book is. Like you said, it's usually we focus on one or two things, but it's not usually quite this broad a spectrum. So
I feel so sad for Caleb. I mean, he's truly like a teenager who's very smart but makes some bad decisions. And he doesn't necessarily always have bad intentions. That's my thoughts about him.
Yeah. We overall pretty much like Caleb.
That's a very succinct summary.
I don't just like him. Got it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. So we're talking about the different themes right now and just how Merrima made an excellent point that a lot of the themes that are in this novel are found in many dystopian novels, and that readers in general seem to be a little bit overwhelmed by the number of themes, and that was kind of one of the main like issues people were taking with the novel. Did you guys think that, you know, as you, when you read the novel, did you think there were an overwhelming amount of themes in it, or were you just like, no, this is where it should be going and how it should kind of move forward?
I liked it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was too many themes. I think maybe the, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe like they didn't have to, because we are stuck in like Tristan Fore's head, they have the burden of kind of talking to us about all of this. So maybe that's why it seemed a little much, but I thought all of the themes that were raised were, I mean, I guess I could just say some of the ones that we wrote, you know, like about purity, genetic purity, being privileged, being brave, you know, the impact on the of the past on the present, which is especially clear if you have, if you bought the book from Barnes & Noble, you know, government, existentialism. I mean, it was like really, really intense, but I think that all of those issues made sense from the book, and they didn't seem like they were crammed in there by any means.
Yeah, and also I think that the other two books had a lot of going on as well, so I don't really buy that argument that there was too much happening in Allegiant. I think the main problem, and we can talk about this later, but the main problem was that people expected one thing with Allegiant, and that's not what they got, and a lot of people seem to find that like very confronting or very like troublesome in a way, because it was a complete curveball, like the entire thing was. So maybe just that on top of, you know, lots going on and then big character moments and Truce dying, like all just going into one thing. But like for the things that were going on, I felt like they all tied in together. Nothing felt like it shouldn't be there. It was extraneous, so it didn't bother me.
We didn't really talk about the split perspective of Tristan Fore. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because you have a final book, you have two different perspectives kind of kicking around in that novel, and a lot of people said they never knew which head that they were in. I didn't really have an issue with that. Did you guys have any issues about knowing which character's head you were in as you were reading?
No, not really. Like I used both the audiobook and the book. The audiobook helped because there's a male narrator, but during like the just reading the book, it was no problem because like in like a couple of pages, someone would talk about Triss, and I'd be like, "Well, I mean, Triss isn't going to talk about herself in third person, so I mean, it made sense." Like, I don't understand why people, like a lot of people, were like, "I don't get it." I'm like, if you just look at who's talking about who, it makes sense.
Yeah, I have to say, I did have a couple moments because I was reading it on the Kindle. So, if you've got a physical book in front of you, if you kind of forget what you're up to, you can very quickly like flick back and see on a Kindle, that's so annoying. So I would just keep going and be like, well, I'm assuming Triss isn't talking about herself in third person, so this must be Fore. Maybe there could have been like a greater differentiation between the voices. I felt like they were pretty similar, but at the same time, I feel like Triss and Fore probably have a pretty similar thought pattern in a way. So, you know, it makes sense that they'd kind of be in line with each other.
Yeah, I'd actually love to know from Joe, like, what that process was when you were kind of figuring out the voices between the two and having them kind of go back and forth. Like, was them being so similar ever, like, an issue? Or did you ever talk about that with Veronica?
Yeah, no, we definitely talked about that very early on because I think, like Marma was saying, they both... Abnegation, Transfer to Dauntless. They both went through very similar recent experience. They both are very guarded people, so it's really hard to make sure that they sound really, really different. I mean, the biggest difference between them is that Fore is much more sensitive. His voice, I don't know if anybody notices this, but this is something that we talked about a lot during revisions. His voice is a little bit more... sometimes poetic in a way, like he looks at the world differently than she does, based on his very early experiences in life. And he is much less trusting, in terms of who he opens up to and who he comes close to. So that was something like, it's just talking about sentence structure. His voice, like he also has like longer thought processes about things, whereas Triss is very much, she makes her decisions quickly. Like she's, you know, she doesn't think about things in a sensitive way or very poetically. Even the sentence structure, she often has a much more staccatoed feel to her voice. So that was something that we thought was different about them, and that's really at the core of who their characters are. He's much more introspective, and she's much more proactive and moving forward, if that makes sense. And he's always looking behind. So that's the only thing I can say about that, I guess.
I think that definitely came across as well. Like, when you're reading it, I did think at a couple points, like, man, Four can really turn a phrase. Like, he has a couple moments there where you're like, yeah, that's, nope, Truce did not say that.
Yeah, no, cool. It's true.
It worked.
Yay. I did need to get used to it. Like, definitely, like, the second or third Four chapter, I was reading as Triss, and then it was like, you know, my Triss, and I was like, what? But like once I kind of got into the rhythm of it and, you know, like reminded myself like, oh no, I just have to keep in mind that they're switching. Like it worked very well. And obviously, you know, it makes sense for the end. Alas.
Yeah. And aside from the end of it, I think the most interesting part about the split was the idea of one of them being genetically pure and one of them not. And, that whole struggle that Four has when he's trying to work out, like, are my actions because of my genetics or, you know, can I just not, is this the reason that I'm doing these things? And Triss really not being able to understand how he was going through that sort of crisis. I felt like that was one of the most interesting ways that she used that split between them. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that was also like, telling like a privileged story from two different perspectives that was really interesting. And I thought that did work really well because, you know, Triss has this moment when she's sitting with Christina and like Christina's like, well, you know, I'm like damaged. And Triss is like, I don't know what to do with this like new power that I have, you know? And I thought that was very, very honest and real.
Yeah. And it was really interesting because, you know, for whatever Four has gone through in his life, as someone that is divergent, like you said, he has been in this sort of both obviously a position of danger, like within the society that they used to be, but also they both seem to have this sort of privileged self view that, you know, because of what they have, or, you know, what they can do or whatever, it's just that they're different, not necessarily better, but they see themselves as being very different from other people. And again, it was just another one of those ways that I think Veronica, she just undermines what you believe. So, you know, we've been told Four's divergent, so we just assume like, okay, no worries. And then we realize that there's another reason that he can do these things that he can do. And it just makes you question all of his other actions for a minute and think like, well, is that because, you know, of his makeup or like what he believes about himself? Or I don't know. I found it really fascinating. I found Four's journey through this book to be like more interesting to me personally than Triss's, and I think that's mainly because of that sort of crisis that he goes through.
No, yeah, I agree.
I'm so glad. I know Veronica wanted these questions and these conversations to stem from this. It sounds yay. Awesome.
Oh, well, you're welcome. It was really good.
Are we satisfied as readers with where this story kind of ended up? How did you guys feel about that? Because I know that we've talked about fan reaction a lot, and it's been a very split kind of reaction. I was reading through all the comments on the review on Hypeable, and it's kind of, people are on both sides of the fence. There really is not a lot of middle ground on this one.
Yeah, if we can we just talk about the fan reaction for a minute before we do our views? But mm-hmm. I think that my main issue with this, and like I wrote a whole article about why you should still read it even if you know you've been spoiled on Truce's death, because like as probably become apparent in this discussion, for me that was not the most critical part of Allegiant. I think there was a lot more things that were going on that were really interesting. But I just want to say to people that are listening to this, first of all, it's never okay. We talked about this on the last episode. You're allowed to have a passionate reaction to a book, and you're allowed to hate a book or dislike a book. You're not allowed to abuse the author that wrote that book. So that is never okay. And I've been kind of disappointed, I guess, that that the reaction has sort of manifested it in that way against Veronica personally in some cases. And also I've been really sad to see people telling other people not to bother reading the book, because, you know, I feel like everyone, if they have been excited for Allegiant, I don't see why they would stop being excited now just because someone tells them that it's not very good. And I think that it, you know, subjectively and objectively is a good book. So I would be, I mean, obviously people that are listening to this, I assume, have read it. But I think it would be a real shame if just because someone didn't like the book, they stopped someone else from having the opportunity to form their own opinion about it. And that is my whole, like, beef with this fan reaction thing. And, yeah, it's been an eye-opening experience. I don't know what you guys think about that.
No, I agree completely. I don't understand how someone cannot like something and then just tell people, oh, no, don't even bother with it. Like, you hate it. Like, most people don't do that with, like, movies. Like, someone doesn't go to a movie and then, like, dislike it. And then when someone goes, oh, did you like it? It's like, yeah, I liked it, but I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you might like it, but people don't go, oh, no, you should, like, don't see it. It's stupid. And, like, I'm like, that's just rude. Like, everyone should get a chance to read the book, and no one should blame Veronica for making them so upset, because, like you said in your article, Marima, like, it's a gift that Veronica is giving the story to us. She doesn't even have to tell the story to us. She could have just kept it to herself, and, like, the fact that she's sharing this whole thing that she's created that's so personal to her to the rest of the readers is fantastic, and we should be thankful that we have this new fandom to, like, be a part of and to make fan fiction and fan art for. We shouldn't, like, bash her for the ending.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we are all big fans of critical reading, so totally read it, and if you don't like it, say why you don't like it. But yeah, I just don't understand. I can't get my head around it. I don't understand why it has been such a strong reaction. And I feel like Allegiant is maybe just like a melting point of, like, fan expectations and in a sense, fan entitlement. And, you know, I don't know, like, Truce's death and maybe some of the kind of game-changing aspects of it. And just all of those things coming together just created this, like, really frenzied response, which is bizarre. And I don't know, it's like watching from afar, because I'm not, you know, super in the Divergent fandom. It's been very interesting to me.
I think you made a really great point with the fan entitlement. I think that since, you know, Harry Potter started, and it started kind of this online thing, and it's all moved forward from then. Any big book series now has an online fandom, and they all have their online websites and all of this different stuff. And I think it's created a sense of entitlement. Well, I was a fan before the movie was made, or I was a fan before this, and movie fans don't like book fans and vice versa. And it's kind of this big, perfect storm of opinion. An opinion on the internet, you're anonymous, so you can say that you hate this person or you hate that, or you can make personal attacks, but you don't ever have to own that you did it because you're anonymous. And it makes people much more vocal than I think they ever were in the past.
Yeah, that's just jerk behavior, though. Like, that's
right,
it
is
jerk behavior.
But I think that that's what we're looking at. And yeah, it's almost like it's cool to have that reaction. Because I think I saw a lot of this, like, when Twilight ended. Because it was this huge, massive thing. And by the time the last movie came out, it was cool to hate Twilight. Do you know what I mean? Like, the whole vibe had shifted.
Yeah, I totally empathize with hating Twilight. You did not need to explain that to me.
No. But, like, people who loved it had then all of a sudden turned around and hated it because it was the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And so I think that this kind of plays into it, that, like I said earlier, I think it has a lot to do with a series ending and people having a lot of emotion and not knowing what to do with that emotion and how to express it. So they express it through hate, because it's easier to hate something than to embrace the fact that it's over.
Yeah, I guess, like, no, that totally makes sense. And I agree with everything you just said. I've said it before, and I will say it again completely, like, without reservation, that an author doesn't owe their readers, like, in terms of story or anything like that, they don't owe them anything. Like, Veronica Roth does not owe the readers of of Allegiant anything except, you know, I'm sure she's like very pleased that people are reading it, so that's nice. But you know, just because like someone, oh, I've had because I've written a couple things about Allegiant since it's come out, and I've had some very angry responses sent to me personally, and one of
I'm
them,
sure
hate
this
mail.
yeah,
Will
yeah,
have some hate mail.
I would say so. But one of them was really interesting, and it said that if she wants to be like remain commercially viable, she should know better than to like you know make the choices that she made. And I just found that so fascinating because, I mean, first of all, it implies like the entire reason she's writing the Divergent series is because she's like, oh, this will be an easy buck, which I mean, first I'm sure Joe can say like, no, that's not true. But also like just this idea that you know she owes the fans this. And she owes them because they've read like her first two books. I just find that ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, I'll be interested to see like in 2 weeks or in 2 months what their response is like then, when everyone's kind of calmed down and have finished grieving and, you know, maybe reread it and rethought some things.
Yeah, I do think it will simmer down. I think that, I mean, I understand people being like, being angry and being like, how could you do this to us? Because especially nowadays, you know, you feel like you can tweet Veronica, you know, you can ask her a question on Tumblr, I think. But she, you know, she uses her website. She's approachable in that internet way. And so I don't think it's anybody's fault that they necessarily feel like there's a relationship and there's sort of like certain things like, oh, you wouldn't go there, you know. But you know, obviously, on the other hand, you have to be reasonable about it. Like I, you know, like we've said, people can be as angry and as upset as they want. I think that they are entitled to that feeling, but I think that they need to kind of be like, you know, it is just a book, and you know, think about it in general.
I feel like people need to remember that, like, we should be happy that we got, like, a happy ending like, even, like, a happy ending in the end, whatever, whatsoever, because it could have gone, like, if Veronica wanted to, she could have made it so that it wasn't a happy ending, because sometimes the people that you like and the characters that you love don't win, and sometimes like, you're fighting on the wrong side, and that side's just gonna lose, and no matter what sacrifices you make and what you do for it, it's not going to change anything. And I feel like, one, that might have been like a really interesting story, but two, I feel like the fact that it didn't go that way, people should be glad. Because if I was writing this, I would have been like, no, everyone's dying, no one's ending happy at all. Because it would have been really awesome to have like a real world situation where like no one wins. And sometimes that just happens, and sometimes you just have to deal with it. And the fact that she was kind enough to her fans to make it so that her characters won and her characters got a happy ending in the end. Now that's awesome. Or maybe I'm just a sadistic freak who wants to kill off everyone in all of my books ever, but that's just saying me. That's
Well,
just my opinion.
I think the good thing, going back to what you asked about 45 minutes ago, Jen, like with our overall responses, I think the best thing about Allegiant was that the way that every character sort of ended up, yes, including Triss, yes, including Uriah, was it made sense in the context of Allegiant, and it made sense to me in the context of the entire series. And like Joe, I know you were saying that you sort of knew that this was where Triss was going to end up overall. And I really felt like by the end of the book that Veronica had obviously planned out at the start what was going to happen to at least all the major characters. But you know, all of the major plot points must have already been in place because it felt very cohesive. And even though it was like a lot of it was really surprising and you totally would not have been able to predict it, after it happened, you're like, yes, that does make sense, and that does fit in with what I know about these characters and this world. So for me, like that's what I took away from the book.
Yeah, I think my favorite part about Triss's death, that sounds awful to say, but it was such a personal thing. Like, yes, it was very grand and it was, you know, saving all of Chicago and you had that whole confrontation with David, but at the end of the day she did it for Caleb, and that was just really, really beautiful to me. And I thought it sucks for Caleb, because he has to live with that now. But I thought it was a really beautiful moment. And I think that was probably even more than any moment that Triss and Four could have had. I think that that moment between Caleb and Triss, when you know, she's like, give me the backpack, and she points the gun at him, it's like that pointing the gun of love, you know, I don't know.
Pointing what? The gun of love.
Yes, she held him up at gunpoint because she loved him.
Okay.
I, you know what's really funny about the ending conversations that most people, what you guys are seeing is exactly, I guess, is great, actually, that you guys are seeing the good parts and the bad parts of the end. And that most people with Four just think, like, God, he's not even happy after that. And he's, you know, it's so depressing. But there are a lot of kids and teens and people who have to deal with an extreme loss. And I think actually his story is really uplifting by the end because it's, he's still, yeah, he's still really, he's really still grieving or whatever it be. But he, it's the whole point is that stuff happens, but we can heal from it. And I actually think that's a maybe I'm in the minority. I think that's a really uplifting message at the end of a book like this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, like, I think this book is a lot more, like, uplifting in the end than, like, The Hunger Games, you know? I think this is a happier ending, even though the main character dies and, you know, there isn't, like, true love does technically not prevail. I think, you know, I thought that the fact that Four did the zipline was, like, really perfect symmetry and, you know, it really showed you how, like what Christina was saying in the end, you know, that person that Four became with Triss was not only worth being, but worth keeping alive. And I think that's what he did in the end. And I think that the epilogue was really well used to show that.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the book, I think, ended optimistically. And, you know, not everything was right, but both with Four and with the society that they're in and, you know, outside with getting rid of the agency and stuff, there is a sense of improvement and things are not perfect right now, but they're getting there. And, you know, like with Four, he's sort of learning to manage in a way. And, you know, you kind of get the feeling that, yes, this is going to be a struggle for him. And I liked how it was paralleled with the struggle that they were going to have to, you know, like maintain their community and find their place in this new world that they've just discovered. And he's finding his place without Triss. I thought, yeah, it was optimistic. I feel like that's I would find it difficult to argue that this was a pessimistic book overall. Yeah, I think overall it was quite uplifting at the end.
Okay. So, Joe, can you tell us what's up next in the world of Divergent? I know we have some more novellas coming out, correct?
Yes. So, The Transfer already came out. The Initiate, oh, geez, it should be coming out very soon. I think The Initiate actually is December. And then there's The Sun in January 21st. And then The Traitor, wait, I think I might have gone out of order. No. Yeah, The Traitor is the last one in February. And they're all going to be bound up and sold as the bound book. So that's also coming out in February. But they're all from Four's point of view. The first three are prequels to the series. And the fourth one overlaps with the events that unfold in Divergent. We see a lot of stuff we didn't get to see on the page in Divergent, which is great. So
that's
excellent.
Cool.
And you had mentioned earlier that there was some extra content in the Barnes & Noble book.
Yes. I mean, I love all the stuff she's been creating, but this might be my favorite bit of extra content. It's in the Barnes & Noble edition. There is a poster in the back. It's a Legion poster, but on the back of the poster are journal entries from Natalie, Triss's mom. And I forget how many entries there are exactly, but those are some of my favorite pieces of extra content. I mean, they tell you a lot about the world and how she got to be where she was inside Chicago. And her voice is just so good. I was like, I want a book about Natalie, but Veronica's like, that's not going to happen, Joe. So, so damn.
Oh, damn.
I can fangirl. Yeah. But, yeah, no, there's some really good content out there. And I believe there's also some deleted scenes. A lot of the
bookstore accounts had asked for extra content. So in Indigo, in Canada, they have some deleted scenes from Allegiant that were taken out in the final draft. And I think that might be it right now.
Okay, so we'll definitely be on the lookout for those. Is there anything we should be on the lookout from Veronica coming up anytime soon? I know she just finished, and this was a really big, probably overwhelming project. But what might be next for her?
You know, she's written like a few pages of a lot of different things right now, trying to find which idea is sticking for her. But she hasn't had a lot of free time. So it really is just a few pages of a lot of things. So I can't say what will be next. You know, she's definitely going to be taking some time off once she's done with publicity. And then, of course, the movie stuff, you know, was going to take off in the new year. So I don't know if we'll have anything to announce for a little while yet.
Yeah, I can see the movie stuff taking up a whole lot of time. That usually gets pretty crazy for the author as well as the actors and everyone else involved in that project.
Yeah, no, for sure. There are going to be two books coming out, kind of like deeper into the world of Divergent books that come out around the time of the movie. I think they're going to come out in February. One is going to be a character guide piece, and so you're going to learn more about each of the characters and the world of. So that will be in like the factions and all that stuff. So that will be coming out, and then I really, honestly, they changed the title of that one recently, so I don't have it, like, off the top of my head. Bad agent, Joanna. And then the other one is going to be, like, a behind-the-scenes of the making of the movie. So there will be stuff for, like, fans who really want to know more about the world of and the characters behind it and everything like that, too.
That sounds really cool, especially the character one, because it's always nice to kind of go back and have more background on a character, even after all is said and done, so maybe it helps distinguish their motives a little bit more, and you can kind of learn little pieces of their background. That's very cool.
Yeah, totally, especially characters like Peter. It's like, I want to know more, so that was really fun to discover.
That Excellent. Sounds terrifying, knowing more about Peter.
I look forward to it. I like Peter, so whatever.
Yeah, I want to know more about Peter. He's really interesting. I
want to know about Peter before he has his memory wiped.
Yeah, but I kind of want to know, like, what he ended up doing after as well, because, like, that would be really interesting to see how... I mean, I know they said he kind of was a jerk also, but, yeah, I kind of wanted to know, like, how much of a quick fix is this really going to be? Or is he just going to be a new person who is also just horrible?
Yeah, that's like the nature versus nurture debate.
Right, it so perfectly was embodied in him, I feel like, a lot of the things that were going on in this.
No, for sure, yeah.
Can I ask you guys if you have any new ships coming out of Allegiant?
You're asking me or are you asking me?
Oh, everyone, just because okay. I personally am totally like Kara and I'm not sure. Kara, Caleb, and Matthew, I could see there's like some kind of something there, but...
I love Kara. She's a great character.
I have you're gonna laugh at me. George and that one guy, was it Amar?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That was like, I love that like really subtle, just kind of like not in your face, just kind of bam, little gay ship. Love it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
you get
to
see more about Amar in her second short story.
Ooh,
I'm
excited.
Yeah, just saying.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I have to say, like, when he first turned up in Allegiant, I did have to Google and be like, who is this guy? Because I do not remember him, because I have not read Divergent in a very long time. But then I was like, oh, yeah, now I remember what's happening. I feel like we could just go on forever. Like, there's so much I want to say about this book still, which is ironic. I feel like, seeing as it said, I was like, I'm like... You know, I liked it, but whatever. But I'm like, but I have to talk about it because it was so interesting. It was really interesting. So, yeah, I feel like this is going to be a very long conversation, as in we'll need to continue over many days and weeks and months as people adjust to it.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see how we follow up with it and see what the fans say, like, in a month.
So, Joe, is there anything you want to tell us about that's coming out from New Leaf, or from any New Leaf authors that we should be on the lookout for?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I guess before we change conversations from that, Veronica, really quick.
Sorry.
Yesterday's event. No, it's fine. Yesterday's event in Chicago was amazing. I mean, all the events have been really great. But Veronica and her brother Carl actually sang a song together that Carl, he's a musician, wrote for Tris back when Divergent, I think, just came out. It's called The Mark. So if anybody wants to hear it, it's on SoundCloud. But it's, to me, even more poignant now about Triss's journey, now that the series is over. It's really beautiful. But, okay, sorry, to go on. When you were talking about that. So to go on, what's new with New Leaf? Wow, we have a lot of stuff coming up. Leigh Bardugo is one of our clients, and her third book in the Grisha trilogy is coming out in June. I'm really excited for that.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, I'm totally biased, but I love it.
No, we love Leah's work here at Hypeable as well. Several people that aren't even on Book Hype have become addicted, so.
Oh, I'm so glad. Okay, cool. So that's coming out in June. Jennifer Von Drack, who wrote Altered, has another book coming out called Erased. It's a sequel. And one is coming out in January, along with Mindy Arnett's new sci-fi series called Avalon, which is awesome. It's kind of like, I think we were pitching it like The Sopranos in space, but it was really great. But I mean, we have a ton of great stuff coming out. I probably could talk for a while. I don't know. You should check out our website, everybody, newleafliterary.com. You could see them all there. But
all right.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds amazing. I always love hearing about new books before they come out. Gives me something to look forward to.
I want to read Sopranos in Space. That sounds amazing.
It's great.
I heard her at New York Comic Con. She was on the, like, We Have Done the Impossible and That Makes Us Mighty panel. And it was really interesting to hear her talk about Avalon, especially because I'd read The Nightmare Affair. And it seems like it's really different from The Nightmare Affair.
Oh, it's so different. You could still, like, reading it, I'm like, this feels like Mindy, very Mindy. So I think crossover fans will be really satisfied with a different story. But yeah, I mean, it's a male main character and she does what's really well. And it's just a lot of action and it's really fun.
Awesome.
Excellent. Joe, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate all of your insight into the world of Divergent. It was great having you on.
Thanks so much for having me. This was really fun.
Please come back.
Yes, come back anytime.
I'd love to.
I'm Jen.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Marima.
And I'm Michal.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.